We'll usher in the last rain report for 2011 in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the festive studios of the Radio Amateur Information Network, this is the Rain Report. I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY. In November 2006, the FCC granted a temporary license to a score of ham radio operators to experiment below 500 kHz in what has become known as the ARRL 500 kHz experiment. Hear the October 28, 2011 Rain Report for background. One station who's experimenting with narrowband Hisense voice modulation on 472.5 kHz is Forest, Virginia resident Brian Justin, WA1ZMS, a senior RF design engineer for Harris Corporation. Brian holds the experimental license call of WD2XSH/31. Those participating in the experimental program are limited to transmitting 5 watts using Morse code and narrowband digital modes. Not so with Brian. Rains Hapali, KC9RP, spoke with Brian about his involvement in this 500 kHz project.
It's an interesting story. First off, I'm the only ham in the world that has worked all 27 U.S. amateur bands. I hold the one and only Worked All Bands Award, which is issued by the Northeast Weak Signal Society. And that involves having QSOs on all bands, at least a distance of 1 kilometer, on every amateur allocation. The lowest would be 160 meters, and the highest would be, in my case, 322 gigahertz. I've actually gone as high as 403 gigahertz. My primary interest is in the microwave band. I remember and know from my roots of living and growing up in Vermont, Fred Robb, W1FR, who is the project coordinator. Out of the blue was I got an email from Fritz asking me, hey, you're pretty active on all the bands, hi. You got any interest in being involved in the 600-meter project? And he said the ARRL was going to modify their Part 5 license and include additional stations. And he asked me if I had any interest in participating in that. And I hadn't talked to Fritz in probably 20 years, and I said, absolutely. I've worked all bands, so why not add one more experimental band to the list? At that same time, I had already had begun construction on this homebrew vintage 1921 transmitter. That transmitter runs 5 watt. It is based solely on RCA handbook notes from the era of 1921. Got the radio built, and it was for 160 meters, but it was very easy to move it down to 600 meters. And so I moved it down to 600 meters and told Fritz, look, I'll start off with this vintage antique transmitter. The design is known as a MOPA, M-O-P-A, which was a term from the 20s. It stands for Master Oscillator Power Amplifier. This is back in the days when CW and Spark were going head-to-head against each other as to who was going to win. Most hams ran power oscillators, meaning the PA was set up as a Colpitts power oscillator. And the more affluent, more, you know, well-off hams at the time decided to build what was called a MOPA, which had a separate oscillator running all the time, driving the PA so that there was less chirp. And there was still a noticeable amount of CW chirp with the MOPA design, but it was nowhere near as bad as it was trying to run a 250 or 500 watt power oscillator by itself, you know, keyed on and off. That being said, I modified the gear to moved it down to 600 kilohertz and got on the air with a mere 5 watts of transmitter power into an antenna here in the backyard. And the antenna still consists of a 160 meter dipole being fed with open wire feed, and it's being used as a Marconi T antenna for 600 meters. There's a relay outside in a control box, and I flip the switch, and that 160 meter dipole and ladder line get fed in on a separate feed line if I want to get on HF. So I sort of have the advantages of everything right there.
What is the largest antenna you can run?
There's no limit to the antenna. Technically, my license is limited, just like WXFH is, to 20 watts of ERP.
So the larger the antenna, theoretically, the lower the power you're able to run because of the antenna help in your ERP.
That's correct. And so what I'm doing in this case right here is, although the MOPA exciter is running just 5 watts, I'm actually driving a 500-watt solid-state amplifier. So I'm sort of cheating in that regard. I have the vacuum tubes to do several hundred watts of antique AM, but the tubes are so rare that I'd rather not use them for this experiment. So I'm set to 200 watts of carrier power. That, with the combined power of the modulation sideband, gets me just a little bit below the 20-watt ERP limit. And that's a function of the Marconi T antenna that I'm using. One of the things that frustrated me from the beginning was that this MOPA, or M-O-P-A, transmitter that I built, actually, I designed it with what's known as a Heising modulator. Raymond Heising was an RF engineer during World War I who was trying to develop a method of voice modulation on a CW transmitter that would be simple and easy. In simple technical terms, the Heising modulator uses an audio tube that is the same tube as the RF tube, and you insert a large choke into the power supply, B plus supply of the transmitter. And the two tubes compete with each other for this constant current modulation. So as you modulate the audio tube, the plate current of the RF tube goes up and down. And the result is you get amplitude modulation out of that. The frustrating thing for me was I never got a chance to use that on 600 meters, even though the radio, the transmitter had it built into it. It sat there idle and unused. Knowing the history of early radio, I had commented to Fritz in an email that it's a shame that I never got a chance, or it looks like hams will never get a chance to run any kind of AM modulation on 600 meters. And he said, well, Fessenden has the historical claim of running the first voice transmission back in 1906 on Christmas Eve. He said, you know how to apply for an STA, or Special Temporary Authorization, with the commission, because you've done it before for other bands. He said, so why don't you go ahead and apply for an STA for 600 meters and see what happens? With that in mind, I very quickly filed an application to the FCC and did the lobbying that I could to try to hurry up and get the FCC to very quickly approve it so that I would have a call sign and be able to legally transmit full carrier AM on the 600 meter band. And that's where the Whiskey Foxtrot 9 X-Ray India Hotel call sign comes from. The audio results are that you never really fully attain 100% amplitude modulation, as would be classically defined. The best you can probably do is about 30 or 40% amplitude modulation.
So you're hearing the carrier further than you're hearing the audio.
Absolutely.
You're listening to a conversation with Brian Justin, WA1ZMS, who is operating as WD2XSH/31, one of those participating in the ARRL 500 kHz experiment. We'll conclude Hap's interview with Brian in a moment. This week, in place of the usual 10 seconds of beeps, you're going to hear a 15-second weak recording of Brian's narrowband Heising modulated signal recorded by a listener in Rhode Island over 500 miles from Brian's Forest, Virginia, 20-watt ERP station. This is The Rain Report, now present on Twitter at twitter.com/TheRainReport.
What you hope to achieve by the time your experiment ends in March of 2012?
Well, the primary goal has already been completed, and that was to recreate the December 24th Christmas Eve transmission that Fessenden originally claims to have made back in 1906, which was to play a piece of classical music by Handel, to play the violin with the song O Holy Night by himself, and to read a Bible verse from Luke chapter 2, verse 14. And on Christmas Eve and Christmas night, I had WAV files of those two pieces of music and a speech synthesizer reading the Bible verse. So I've completed that portion of the event, if you will. My license is good until March 1st of 2012. I've had several requests from listeners of the 600 meter band, since they were tied up with family commitments, obviously, on Christmas Eve, if I could please rerun the Christmas Eve broadcast on New Year's Eve. And I plan to do that. There were a couple of other minor, call them political points or examples that I wanted to set with this project. One of them was the fact that there is a CW coastal station whose call sign is Whiskey November Echo in Massachusetts that is actually licensed for 472.0 kilohertz. That station runs CW Maritime Weather Reports twice in the evening. The example that I wanted to set there to be sort of a pro 600 meter amateur band allocation was that he and I were able to work out a time schedule where he gets 2 hours a day blocked out when I'm not on the air, that he has primary allocation and he's able to run his CW weather reports at 25 words a minute. When he's done transmitting is when I come on the air.
Oh, it's 472 kilohertz.
Right. He's on 472. My center frequency is 472.5, so I'm 500 hertz higher than him.
How wide is your signal typically?
I'm only allocated a 5 kilohertz bandwidth. From my license is only good from 470 to 475. So I'm running an audio processing equalizer that sets it to about 2.5 kilohertz wide.
Does it sound comparable to the old screen grid type AM modulation?
Yeah, it probably does. There's some heavy audio filtering there. There's no audio tones making it to the modulator. I'm using a graphic equalizer to make sure that's the case, of around 3 or 4 kilohertz. Everything above that is drastically cut off. My spectral bandwidth per license is limited to just, you know, 470 to 475.
How many stations have you worked thus far?
Well, I haven't actually worked any. I'm transmitting only. Personally, as WXSH31, I've had 7 QSOs on CW. But I've had DX reports for the WF9XIH broadcasts or transmissions as far as south as carrier detection in Florida and as far north as VE3 near Ontario and everywhere in between on the East Coast. As far west, certainly out towards the Midwest and Chicago, Wisconsin, Illinois, that area.
If someone would like more information or they'd like to contact you directly, how would they do that?
Best way is via email, my call sign, wa1zulumikesierra@arrl.net.
How about a website?
Somebody is hosting it for me. W4DEX is hosting the website, and what I'll do half is I will email you the link.
All right, we'll put it on the site's mention page for those who want to go find that.
It's sort of a recreation of radio history, and it also demonstrates that hams and commercial stations can actually share the same radio spectrum successfully.
And what times do you actually make your transmissions following WNE out of Massachusetts?
I'm typically on sometime between 9 and 10 Eastern Time, and I run all night long an audio loop of the different audio files until about 8 a.m. the next morning.
And you're on 472.5.
If anybody does copy the transmission, whether it be the transmission or even the carrier itself, to please log the QSO at the website 500kc.com. My goal is to promote the dream of an amateur band in the United States on 600 meters, you know, at 500 kilohertz.
We're not far away from that now, are we?
Work 12 is going to have it on the agenda to try to come up with a global harmonized allocation. The risk that we run with that is just because the ITU comes up with a 500 kilohertz allocation or nearby doesn't mean that the FCC has to accept it automatically right away.
There's really not much down there to interfere with. Yes, sir.
Well, there's not, but what there has been is a tremendous amount of opposition from the maritime folks. The spectrum below 500 kilohertz and including 500 kilohertz right now in the United States is primarily allocated to the maritime radio service. Even though there is hardly any CW or any data going on at all down there, station WNE being an example is a user at 472. Their collective organization, the Maritime Radio Association, wants to establish 500 kilohertz and anything nearby as a national historical frequency and has strongly opposed any amateur allocation in that frequency region.
Are they anti-ham radio or just anti-anybody being near their area?
I don't think they're anti-ham radio. I think they are pro-maritime. They feel that because you have to look at it from a historical perspective, from around 1903 or so is when the Berlin Treaty was signed globally that acknowledged 500.0 kilohertz as the international distress frequency. And historically, all coastal stations and all ships at sea had to stop transmitting any data or any traffic on 500 kilohertz at 15 minutes after the hour and 45 minutes after the hour to allow for 15 minutes of monitoring for any SOS calls. A lot of folks that have been in radio for 40 or 50 years, that's part of their heritage. And they're rather resistant to having that frequency or anything near that frequency reallocated to another radio service.
I suppose it's the same territorialism, if you will, being expressed by the amateur fraternity when it comes to 440 megs or some other existing ham allocation that might be threatened.
Well, precisely, exactly. I mean, the same thing happened in 1985 when we had the battle on 220 megahertz, where the hams lost 220 to 222. Was that band heavily used by amateurs around the U.S.? No, not really. Were there users? Yes, there were users. But there were other commercial interests that demanded that spectrum as being necessary for commerce.
In retrospect, nothing's happened.
Absolutely. Everybody applied for and put 220 megahertz trunking systems on the air, and nobody used them.
Maybe the ham should try to get it back.
This concludes our ARRL 500 kilohertz experiment update, in which we heard from Brian Justin, WA1ZMS, who is operating from Forest, Virginia, using the experimental call sign WD2XSH-31 on 472.5 kilohertz, transmitting narrowband Hising modulation, but only until March. You'll find his email address and a link to his website on the site's mention page on therainreport.com. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2011 Rain, all rights reserved. Now, for all those connected with these Rain Reports, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, bidding you a very 73. From the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.